Well, hey everybody. Hi, I'm Dave Krueger. I'm eager to begin this collaboration with you on what I think are really important areas of stress mastery and performance. We're going to look together at the latest research and especially application on performance under pressure and practical understanding and strategies you can use for yourself and your clients in business, the arts, sports. We're going to cover a range of proven stress mastery tools and peak performance strategies. There's a lot of information I want to share with you. The outline at the page you were directed to when you signed up, the outline is downloadable to print. I would suggest you do that. It's a fairly annotated outline, so you don't have to take a lot of notes, if any. Everything that's important is there, so that you could just kind of listen and integrate it and see if it makes sense. There's also a second document to download, resources and exercises, at that same page. And that's the page where the ports are for the recording of each of the four seminars that we'll do together. It will be up sometime during the day tomorrow. So my hope is to be able to co-create with you in this collaboration a peak experience in itself. And at the beginning and the end of each of the four seminars, I'll reserve time for discussion and questions. Now, there are a number of people on the call, so to manage, and you guys are doing a great job right now, manage the background noise. If there's any movement, if you're on a headset and you move around or shuffle papers or anything, do a star six until you're ready to ask a question or talk or comment. And then do star six again to unmute. So first, thank you for sending some answers to the two questions that I emailed. If you didn't see those, I'm interested in your response now to add to the ones I have. The two questions. If we were to sit down right now face to face, what's the most important question you have about this topic? And secondly, after our four seminars, if you walk away saying this is one of the best seminar series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? I welcome your responses and input always during these discussion times, and especially what you got in terms of answers to either or both questions. One at a time now. What's the most important thing that you'd like to focus on about this topic? And the margin note here, the secret is this is exactly what you ask your clients at the beginning. What would you like to focus on? What do you want to walk away with? Same thing you begin each coaching group with to get the group to discuss what they want to talk about, what they want to do. So I'm interested in your input. I can customize some of what I say to the responses and to be sure that this is going to meet your needs. I have some great ideas, but I agree with most of everything I say, so I'm really interested in what you want to particularly focus on and walk away with.
Okay, so I'll be brave and be the first one.
And double bravery would be to say your name.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to do that. Okay, so this is Elizabeth Lucero. The biggest thing for me, and I'm from Nevada, and the biggest thing for me, I mean, this came in a day when I couldn't go to work because the stress level was so high. And so I personally, and for people that I would hope that I'll be working with in the future, how to get stress, I guess to get the stress under control and push past it to be able to get to that place in your life where it's really a non, you know, it really doesn't affect your life.
Great question. You came to the right place. Elizabeth, did you sign up under some other name, or did you very recently register?
I recently registered. It might be under Lisa Lucero.
Okay. Okay. All right. Great. Thanks.
I don't really remember Lisa's my nickname.
I believe that the question you ask, that the most important thing, there were two studies in fairly recent time, one in Harvard Business Review and the other Scientific American Mind, that found that the greatest success factor for executives in across all kinds of businesses was self-regulation. In other words, management and regulation of states of mind and self-reflection.
Okay.
Now, I think we can substitute everybody in the world for executives there, because it's the most important thing that I think we can help our clients do in mentor coaching, is to help them regulate their state of mind so that they can enter an optimum state where they have the developed skill. You know, think about deliberate practice of an athlete for a particular skill. They have to enter and sustain that state of mind for the performance. If they think about it too much, they choke. We're going to talk about all that. So that's a really important question. And we're going to look today at a micro system to do that. And that's going to be, you look in your resources section. There's a, I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know what page it's on, but we're gonna talk about how that was developed and how to use it with your clients. There's a single page called the Neural Conditioning Chart. So here's the principle. If you want to change a habit or create a new one, focus on the system, not the goal. Everybody wants the same goal, you know, whatever that is. But this is to everyone. And so focus on the system. So we're going to look at a systematic way to do that. And the micro system is the neural conditioning chart. And there's a macro system, a larger system that we're going to talk about that I use the acronym ROADMAP system for.
Okay.
7 steps. Okay. All right, well, thank you for that. Great question. Other questions, other things that you want to be sure we focus on and cover? Well, I will reserve some time at the end for discussion. I'd sure like to hear any other things. Are there other ideas, other things that would make this immensely useful to you? And I assume all of you are coaches, and that you do, as I primarily do, mentor coaching with clients individually or in groups or in other configurations. So this, to me, would need to be practical for you, for your work with clients. But remember, the first way of effectiveness is when we really understand and have mastered our own story. Then we can listen in a more meaningful way to help a client develop their story, whether that's a life, a business, a wellness, a relationship, a money story, whatever it is. We're going to talk about the fundamentals of that, of developing a story in that way. So other things that you want to be sure we highlight?
I am curious, is this outline that we received today, is that for all four classes?
Yes.
Okay.
When you say you received it, you were directed.
It came to me now.
You download the outline, and it's for all four of the seminars and the resource and exercises. You'll see some application throughout, but it's not segmented in terms of a syllabus for each of the ones, but just to look to, and I'll refer to ones that we'll use.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so anyone who has other thoughts, ideas, or things that are input, and I had a note from a few that you'll have to listen to the first seminar. I hope you can join us for the second, so feel free to email me. You see my email when I did the welcome. And if you didn't receive receive that for some reason, it's David_Kruger, K-R-U-E-G-E-R, at CoachTrainingAlliance.com. And the easier one is just dkruger at mentorpath.com. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode and jot down any questions or thoughts or clarifications that you have, and we'll come back and talk to you. In our first seminar, we're going to talk about stress mastery strategies and tools. When I was in the singles lift line at Steamboat Springs, about to advance to the chairlift, an instructor beside me who had five kids, all about age 5 to 6, asked me if I would mind if two of them rode in the chairlift with me. Well, I welcomed the opportunity. I was excited. As we got on the lift, the little girl next to me, she was in the middle. There was a guy on the outside. She had kind of an awkward seating and kind of slumped a little bit as we were riding and talking. As we got closer to the end of the lift to ski out of the chair, she said in a really timid voice, "I'm scared to get off." And I said, "I understand." And I asked her, "Do you know who Laurie Hernandez is?" It was just after the 2016 Summer Olympics when Laurie had won a gold in the team event and a silver on the balance beam. The little girl looked at me and said, "Yes." I asked her if she would like to know what Laurie did when she was scared about performing her gymnastics routine. She immediately said, "Yeah." I told her that Laurie did three things. She pictured herself doing a perfect routine, a vision of exactly how she would perform. Then, the instant before she began, she took a deep breath to breathe in relaxation, breathe out any tension, and said to herself, "I got this." Well, my new little buddy seemed interested in this and sat just a little bit more upright, so I was hoping it took. As we were just a few seconds from getting off the lift, I nudged her and asked her what she was going to say to herself as she got off. She said in a timid, hesitant voice, "I got this." And I nudged her again and said, "Say it like you really mean it." Then, in a voice that seemed to channel all of her 5 years into somebody I would not want to meet in a dark alley, she said very confidently, "I got this." As she skied out of the chair perfectly, she stopped, turned around to look at me from about 10 or so feet away. At the same instant, we both did a 1-inch air fist bump. We both smiled, and then she skied off with her instructor. So, a brief overview. I called my wife at the end of the day and told her about that. She said, "You know, someday when she's delivering her first baby, she's going to scream out and scare everybody in that delivery room and say, 'I got this.'" Here's a brief overview. In the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain sciences, neuroscience, psychology, performance sciences, to apply new tools to engineer optimum performance. So I want to synthesize and integrate these new frontiers to help you consciously attain peak performance mentally and physically. Neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. Now, this means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, and attachment patterns. This operating system ghostwrites beliefs, emotions, and patterns, the shadow story that operates on unconscious autopilot. Now, a script refers to the default mode of expectations, experiences, and responses of how we write our stories. Our expectations inform attachment and behavior patterns that result in a typical, even stereotypical, response to given situations. As we repeat patterns, our brain wires those as the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates largely without conscious thought. think about, like, at a family gathering or a board meeting, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but order the same thing. Now, to deconstruct this system, and I want to teach you the algorithm pattern understanding of how your brain operates. And we'll get to that. To deconstruct this system, to understand the algorithms of pattern of attachment and performance behaviors, we have to examine this default mode, this script, because change involves breaking the script. We can engage in self-directed neuroplasticity. In other words, we can rewire our brains to create new behavior side by side with unlearning old automatic behavior. The approaches to changing behavior that work also consider what it does to your personal stories and your identity. So, again, how many of you know how to program a computer? The algorithms, pattern sequences? An algorithm is simply a finite series of steps used to solve a problem or make a decision. So we're going to talk about how to reprogram your mind software and rewire your brain. Now, there are two proven systems to apply to stress mastery and optimum performance. Both are in the outline, the resources section. One, I mentioned the neuroconditioning chart, the microsystem. It's a systematic way to identify emotional triggers and to rewire planned ideal responses for peak performance. And secondly, the roadmap system. It's a macro system, a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personal performance and to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior to perform under pressure. Now, a sidebar here, a word on the limits of algorithms. This comes from Harris County Judge Ed Emmett. For Houston, Texas, 3 500-year floods in 3 years means either we're free and clear for the next 1,500 years or something has seriously changed. So there are limits to this. Science is about patterns, the fundamental laws and principles that form the foundation of our lives and world. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. Many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to the way the mind and the brain work. It's not about having all the answers, since most of our operating system is unconscious and not directly accessible anyhow, but having the informed framework to ask the right questions and an evidence-based system to implement strategic change for best results. In other words, to create an optimum performance story. When Dr. Helen Czerski was studying physics at Cambridge, she was in her grandmother's kitchen looking at textbooks and charts of quantum mechanics. Her grandmother looked at her material and said, "What can you do when you know that?" Dr. Czerski has been an expert lifetime answering her Nana's question, and the unspoken follow-up question that she knew her Nana thought but didn't say as she waited for the answer. And why should I care? We're about to answer Nana's two questions, spoken and unspoken. First, we're going to talk about several minds, two brains, and one focus. First, let's begin more broadly. Several minds. A state of mind is like a software program that determines what we perceive, how we process information, and then how we respond. Our minds constantly monitor and interpret to give us a running account of what's happening, what it means, what to do. Each mindset is its own software system. It's complete and internally consistent. Mindsets frame the ongoing process of our operating system. Mindsets include powerful beliefs that inform the stories we write about ourselves. Researchers at Norwegian University of Science and Technology recently discovered that the brain operates by creating multiple independent maps for different kinds of stimuli. What that means is the human brain operates like a Google map. We see something and we immediately boot up the mindset that we have formed to handle that. When a new situation arises, different map is booted up. So we have different states of mind or mindsets for different situations. Now, this also explains, I think, how important it is to understand the context and framing for different situations and to have a cohesive story to organize and direct that series of maps. In other words, we're actively creating a story, and it's not just a matter of reacting to each situation when we have effectiveness and mastery in determining that story. And as mentor coaches, in listening to the story that is informing what your clients say to you, even though they don't consider it a story. For them, it's not a story. It's just the way things are. This is simply a way to organize how we listen and how we understand things to make sense of it, to be, in my view, of optimum benefit for them. Now, state always comes first. The state of mind, then a strategy and story. Think about how often we are inclined when a client presents an issue and we want to move immediately into, let's deal with that, let's look at the strategy and the plans, goals, the commitments. Within a state of mind, though, as with any software program, the patterns are predictable and consistent. Predetermined meanings, connections, internal associations. When Susan gets angry with someone on the executive team, she'll become more authoritative and demand better performance. That's a mindset that she entered. When Robert is confronted with a challenging task, he'll engage an attachment pattern to get someone to make a decision that he can sign off on. That's the content of that state. Now, the systematic approach to breaking the script directly addresses the default mode of algorithms that are played out in relationships and behaviors and emotions. To revise the story, we first have to understand the script and then have a systematic way to address change. To recognize and own the process, to assess what to do differently, and to create a systematic way of change. Those are the first four steps in the roadmap that I just slipped in on you there. We'll come back to that. The initial state is to perturbate the default mode, which by definition, for any of us or a client, is uncomfortable because it breaks the script and the automatic responses. A default mode, the script, has its own continuity, and we feel comfortable when things are certain. We're uncomfortable with change, and we can activate new processes that are different and disrupt the default mode. But that's how we learn. We don't learn when we follow the script and it works. Now, a stimulus such as a memory, a thought, a person, a place can instantly shift our attention. Once we focus on the stimulus, it boots up a state of mind that then determines how we perceive and how we process everything that follows. Two crucial elements in performance become how to boot up an optimum mindset and then how to fully develop the skills within that mindset for the best results. To enhance capacity and performance requires deliberate practice and systematic execution for peak performance. We're going to look and examine both of these in detail in Seminar 3. The brain rewires when we have focused attention on something, the brain rewires based on two things, possibilities and new experiences. The repetition of new experiences then encodes new learning in neural circuitry. So let's look at a practical application here. Surface and shadow stories. The surface story is our usually logical, conscious intention and aspiration. This is what I want from life. These are my goals. Now, the shadow story that ghostwrites behavior That's from the 90 to 95% of our operating system that's automatic and unconscious. May include beliefs that may or may not be conscious, like, well, I can't really get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I need, or, you know, I don't think I really have what it takes, or what if I, you know, go all in and then I still fail, I'm going to experience shame. Now, when the surface and shadow stories go in opposite direction, the result is stuckness. The surface story and the shadow story express the desire and the obstacle, often simultaneously. For example, the surface story sees money as security, freedom, pleasure, or worth, depending on the individual. But the same brain may be wired to link it to the shadow story of greed or evil or selfishness. A simple example of a surface story. I want to generate more income and create wealth. Now, there may be a shadow story of, I don't think I have what it takes, or I wasn't born to have money. We want one thing, but may unconsciously do something else. What results reveals which is stronger. Now, an inhibition is often the expression of a conflict between the surface and the shadow story. When the surface story goes in one direction and the shadow story goes in the other direction, someone's stuck. Then here's something that I think is really important. The biggest obstacle that keeps us from having what we want is the story we create about why we can't have what we want. I can't find the time. I'm not sure it'd be worth it. I may not know what to do. Let's look now at two brains, the top-down and the bottom-up system. We have two essentially independent brain operating systems with competing interests that try to balance urge and logic. The most pressing conflict is not between us and the rest of the world, but between these two brain systems. We want to save for the future, yet enjoy spending money on a purchase now. We want to be healthy, balanced with wanting cheesecake, especially with the strawberry topping. The balance can be tipped sometimes by adding strawberry topping. When we write two stories simultaneously that go in the opposite direction, it's not a metaphor, it's brain chemistry. One example is the reward center of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, that releases the pleasure chemical of dopamine with the anticipation of a purchase, of buying something. The pain center of the brain, the insula, responds when we have to part with our money to pay. We have to give up something that's ours. It's like an amputation. So what do credit card companies do? They segment the two, the purchase from the pay. The two parts of the brain don't operate at the same time when you do a credit card. Now, the bottom-up system one runs automatically on impressions and feelings. It's immediate and intuitive. The bottom-up consists of our impulses, habits, and our reflective attention and reaction. It's quick and impulsive and requires focus and strategies to develop self-awareness and deliberate planning. The top-down system two is conscious, logical, seat of control for all of our executive functioning and reasoning. This top-down system determines voluntary attention and choice, the consideration and deliberation of decision-making. Now, when the bottom-up system prevails, decisions shift toward impulsivity, overspending, overborrowing, overeating, other addictive habits can occur without conscious regulation or direction. A particularly challenging problem is the presence of unconscious biases that we have programmed into the bottom-up system, often without conscious awareness or even things we may consciously detest in the top-down system. We'll come back to that. An awareness of the factors which lower our threshold to resilience against impulsivity also becomes essential to recognize, also a preview of coming attraction. Now, willpower is the triumph of the top over the bottom system. Willpower means we stay focused on our goals despite the urges of impulses and passions along with the default mode. Now, willpower alone is not enough. It can be influenced by a number of variables that can deplete it. Stress, sustained mental effort, even low glucose. So, to Nana's question, unspoken, why should you care? Because this is all crucial for deliberate practice, skill development, and optimum performance. This is just laying a kind of a framework. We're going to get to very practical applications, so hang on. Now, the final one focus. Several minds, two brains, one focus. Let's talk about one focus for a moment. A pro tennis player was having an outstanding season in her career. We met just before she was leaving for Wimbledon, where she was one of the top seeds. She was having difficulty with her serve, and her usual powerful, flawless serve was strained. I asked her to take us detailed frame by frame through her usual flow pattern of service, then to describe what she was experiencing now that was different, kind of a split screen. When she got to the point of, for right now, tossing the ball into the air, she recognized that she had an instantaneous flash of her coach looking at her critically. This literal nanosecond of moving from the state of flow of that motor memory of deliberate practice, the procedural process that had become so automatic, disrupted that well-grooved pattern. Any nanosecond of thinking about something in a developed skill like this will cause someone to choke. Yogi Berra put it very simply, you can't think and hit at the same time. When she instantaneously and almost imperceptibly moved from total reliance on her bottom-up system one of automatic superb performance, well-grooved from tens of thousands of hours of practice to her top-down system two to think about what she was doing, she hit the ball very slightly differently. But it would have never shown up in my game. At the level of her play, this meant everything. So, here's the application. The power is in the focus. The unconscious mind does not distinguish positive versus negative. It does not recognize future versus past, but only on the focus, the here and now. This is the power of selective attention. The brain works like a camera. Out of the possibilities, what you choose to focus on determines your awareness and aligns the energy field of your brain for attention. Attention holds the key to choice architecture. This is our specialty. In coaching, attention serves to regulate emotion and thus the state of mind that's chosen for a task. Successful performance execution depends on directing and sustaining focus to a specific choice, a specific focus, and ignoring everything else. Here's a fairly simple application. My wife gifted both of us with enrollment in the BMW Racing School in Greenville, South Carolina, about 4 years ago for our 10th anniversary. It was a fascinating and masterful application of performance science as we went through various aspects of driving challenges over several days with pro racers. One of the early basics they taught us was how to navigate sharp turns and curves at very high speed. Since our brains follow our eyes, our focus, in other words, when we look at where we want to go, we create a successful turn even under pressure. If we look at the obstacle we want to avoid, our brain follows our eyes there too, and we get what we focus on. Focus on avoiding the obstacle, you'll regularly hit it. Remember, the unconscious does not know the difference between positive or negative. Focus on the obstacle, avoid the obstacle, same focus, the obstacle. When a coach focuses on what not to do with players, it becomes a prelude to anything from a compromised performance to a choke. An individual getting analytical, especially self-critical, disrupts the flow of that bottom-up system to move outside the zone of performance, to become an observer. And this is not a time you want to inhabit your prefrontal cortex when you're planning, and when you're performing. And that includes doing a presentation. It includes business performance, sports performance, artistic performance. Get in the flow of that state of mind. You don't start thinking about it. If you start thinking about it, you're going to have trouble. The most fundamental principle is one we know quite well from neuroscience and quantum physics. You get what you focus on, not what you want. So look at where you want to go from the next curve to 20 years from now. Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian with 22 medals, including 18 golds, described the significance of focus for him. When I'm focused, there is not one single thing, person, anything that can stand in my way of doing something. If I want something bad enough, I'm going to get there. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions. We know that from coaching. We don't go back into problems, understand the dynamics, the origin. We look at the choice architecture of this moment, of the possibilities, of what's the next best thing. But the already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems, even if you try to solve them. This is why people can get stuck in therapy or in simply seeing problems, sort of regular meetings of the Ain't It Awful Club. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. We know from an entire discipline of appreciative inquiry that we want to ask questions in the direction that someone needs to go. We literally mold our brain pathways and synaptic connections by what we focus on. We choose what we pay attention to. While we can't control what happens to us, we can determine how much it affects us, where we direct our focus and attention. A simple example is rather than focusing on obstacles that hold us back, we focus on things that move us forward and the positive connection. So here's a very simple three-step summary, a process to specifically counter negative thought or negative self-talk. Reframe the thought as an error message from your brain. Delete it. Refocus on what you want to do that's positive and part of your plan. Consider maybe even a delete button your brain for that second step, so that when you think of something negative or have an intrusive thought, it becomes a simple visualization of deleting that negative thought. This is a variant of don't believe everything you think. So let's talk now about regulating states of mind and managing emotion. Now, to reiterate, a state of mind is a set of particular emotions, memories, mental models, behavioral patterns, analogous to a software program. A key element of mastery is to become aware of various states of mind with particular focus on what works best for what purpose. The greatest challenge is to regulate states of mind through various emotional triggers and charged situations. As I said, I believe it's the most important variable to determine successful performance of any type, athletic to intellectual to business to artistic. The state of mind determines the meaning you attach, and the meaning determines behavior. So by changing the state of mind, you change the behavior. So here's what we know now. A gap in performance. Now, all of this is in your outline. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset than with motivation and intelligence. When a performance in any endeavor, athlete, surgeon, executive, has practiced essentially the same thousands of hours as the next person, optimum outcome is determined by specific mental state for optimum performance. Now, here are some factors that lower the threshold to emotional triggers that make you more vulnerable to predispose to compromised performance. Preset meanings like certain biases, depleted energy, distraction, emotional overwhelm, too many choices. Significant emotional charge like specific triggers. We're going to elaborate on that in a minute. Or after experiencing ineffectiveness or powerlessness, or extreme success. It's equally challenging, probably more so extreme success. We'll return to that in Seminar 4. One example of such influence is how even slightly depleted energy can cause people to fall back to an earlier default mode of thinking and deciding. In a study reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, 8 parole judges were studied for 3 years in their decision-making processes regarding applications granted for parole. The average rate over the 3 years for these 8 judges of granting parole was 35%. The exact time of each decision was studied in relation to the judge's 3 food breaks, morning, lunch, and afternoon. After each meal or snack, when their blood glucose was higher, 65% of requests for parole were granted. Just before noon, just before the end of the day when blood glucose was lowest, their approval rate dropped to almost 0%. At these times of low blood glucose and greater fatigue, they resorted to a more critical and judgmental thinking, and they were not aware of how this affected the outcomes. Now, I introduced this story as one of a series of strategies to a financial consultant and mentor coaching with me who had an upcoming 3.5-hour meeting with a client who would be potentially investing $30 million with her. We looked at everything from when the snacks were going to be served, and I'll return to this, to where the seating was and the framework of the room. Now, as few as 20% of people have a flow experience on a daily basis, and 15% of people never really experience flow at all. In the zone of flow, we're most likely to perform at our performance best. In this zone, we most readily acquire and integrate new skills and deliberate practice. A typical result of not being in the zone of flow is that attention scatters. So the zone experience is one of optimal performance, not just in sports, but in any arena of functioning, including executive and parenting. Flow is a very specific state of mind, remaining absolutely in the present moment to access and sustain peak performance. Highest performance is within the state of flow to direct and channel the skills and the training that have occurred in that for this moment. One pro athlete I worked with came to incorporate and apply everything we talked about in regulating states of mind and entering the flow his performance mindset in his all-star career. After every play, this was an episodic sport, not a flow sport. After every play, he would automatically say to himself, reset. He knew that in order not to have an excitement or a disappointment from the last play carry over, and to be totally grounded, centered, and get back in that optimum state of flow, he had to reset. So in a grounded and centered state of mind, he had access to all of his incredible skill for optimum performance. So let's look at neural wiring for emotional triggers. The neural conditioning chart, and I would suggest you get that in front of you now. It's in the outline, page 14. We'll address self-regulation in this systematic way. So as you look at it, to illustrate how I developed it, I want to tell you an initial story of the first use of it. I've refined it and applied some refinement and principles even more directly, but let me just tell you the story of the beginning because it'll give you an idea of how to apply it. Barbara began one of our executive mentor coaching sessions to say she wanted to move to a personal focus on the upcoming Thanksgiving holidays with her family. She mentioned a pattern that each time she goes home to her family, usually for one major holiday a year, and it would rotate, this year it was going to be Thanksgiving. She notices the same problem. She described the pattern with some embarrassment. We have a big family gathering where my parents, my brother, my sister, their families all come together for the holiday weekend, usually 3 days. I resolve before I leave that this time is going to be different. I will not get into arguments or struggles with my parents and brother and sister. I focus intensely on being balanced and not getting upset. I can usually last most of the first day, but then something happens and I just lose it. I get in a fight with one of my family, then it escalates and I'm in a fight with all of them and we're on a standoff for the rest of that holiday time. I first reflected, remember I said state is most important and we need to resonate with the emotional state to create a common ground. So I reflected on how frustrating this must be for her to want an enjoyable holiday and how upsetting it was for her when this was not the case. She wholeheartedly agreed. So I ask, at the time you're in the middle of that upset and are in arguments with them, what's the age of that conversation? She knew immediately what I was talking about, and she instantaneously said, early adolescence, like I'm 13 or 14, instantly and totally at that time, and I'm stuck there for the rest of the visit. I asked her specifically what she was aware of that triggered her reactions. She described a particular look from her dad, a word from her mother, a gesture from her brother, a particular kind of competitiveness she got into with her sister that would instantly, any one of these, create the state change to her reactive mode of that adolescent turmoil. I recommended first that she schedule a time to do a brainstorming session with herself, at least 20 to 30 minutes, where there were no interruptions, no distractions, no texts, calls, nothing, and get in a state of mind where she could address and recall each of the emotional triggers that she was aware of without letting them be triggering. This is column one, emotional triggers. I emphasize that she remained grounded and centered while she was doing this to remain an observer, to not reenter that space. Then, for each emotional trigger in her column one, that she put beside it in column two, her usual response, the behavior, the thoughts, the feeling. So this column two of the usual behavior was that instantly altered state of mind that would include all the feelings and behaviors, the negative self-talk. This was her age 13 time capsule. I suggested then she schedule a second brainstorming session with herself on another day, at least one day in between, where she would think about two things. Now look at column three and column four. A mantra for getting grounded and centered for each emotional trigger. A mantra consists of three parts. A cue to initiate the process. Barbara used the cue of touching her ring. A focus phrase to align the energy field of her brain. I'm going to give you an example in a minute. And a physiology such as a deep breath for relaxation. Each emotional trigger deserves its own pairing with a mantra and then an ideal pre-planned response. To write an ideal response in column four for each emotional trigger, this proactive planning instead of her usual reactive response created a game plan, a system for her personally challenging situation. She sent me her initial draft of the four columns. I emphasized that the purpose of the first two columns was to cue her radar to recognize not only the triggers, column one, but also the resultant state change and especially the content of that state, column two, as quickly as possible to use her mantra then to get grounded and centered, column three, and to engage her usual ideal response, column four. Column two is where we most likely get stuck, and that's where most likely we try to fix it. And by definition, it's a time capsule. You can't strategize, you can't circumvent, you can't therapize your way out of any of the content in column two. It'll always be there. It's in a time capsule. Now, our first session after that Thanksgiving holiday, I was really eager to hear how it went. She immediately began the session by saying it was the best holiday she had ever had with her family. There were times of challenge. There were even times when she would excuse herself, which I had mentioned before. You have, this is not the NBA. You have an unlimited number of timeouts. When she would excuse herself to use the privacy of a walk or just go into the next room to get grounded and centered again to engage the behavior that she really wanted. A couple of times it would just go to the bathroom and splash some water on her face. Those were particularly times for her sister, I think. She was immensely pleased with her work, as I was for her. So now, let's review these steps of the neuroconditioning chart. Column 1, emotional triggers. The first step is to identify the emotional trigger that sets a reactive chain beginning with a state change into motion. You most likely can't change that external cue, but earlier recognition can begin a different trajectory for handling it internally and externally. All of column two, that little thin line between column one and column two, is a state change. The content of that state change, all the software program, the negative self-talk, the lack of confidence, all of the content of that state of the column two, it is there, it will always be there. The key is whether you re-engage it, re-enter it. Certain emotional triggers have the impact of creating an instantaneous state change. The usual response is the altered state in that time capsule. Immediately on entry, everything is the same as when that state of mind was first formed. All the feelings, associations, perceptions, anxieties, and frustration can be all part of those experiences preserved in this time capsule. And again, the state change only takes a nanosecond. A shift of state of mind is so common and so imperceptible it becomes invisible. These sometimes decades-old patterns of thoughts and feelings have not changed since the time capsule of each state of mind when it was formed. It will always be the same inside it. These time capsules also house earlier selves, experiences that come from an earlier time and place, yet can be instantaneously activated with full immersion and the full experience of that state of mind. Here's the key point. It immediately seems like the content, whatever is in that column two, the self-talk, the messages, the negative assumption, it seems like they created the state change. It's the result of it. The creation is the state change as response to the trigger. Now, our compulsion to repeat is unrelenting, yet in repetition, we re-enter that time capsule and its unchanging narrative script. The repetition becomes familiar, even creating the illusion of effectiveness because we know the outcome. It's as if the story we tell ourselves about who we really are becomes who we really are, our core identity, our reality. At times, it's hard to distinguish the stories of a situation from the situation itself. Now, here's an elaboration on column three, the mantra. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach Robert Reed arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage out of 217 teams in his division nationwide. So, during practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. A cue, he suggested, two dribbles. A three or four word phrase that would align the energy field of the brain, he suggested, relaxed and smooth. And then a deep breath, breathing in relaxation and breathing out any tension. These occur in a 3 to 5 second period of time, it becomes more and more automatic. As they dribbled a couple of times, they say the phrase, do the deep breath. Additionally, he simulated game conditions by abruptly stopping a player in practice, asking him to shoot 2 free throws. Reed simulated the mindset of pressure in a game situation by suddenly to stop and shoot a free throw, because in a game situation, you know, at the end of the game, do 30 free throws and count the number ones that you made. In 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. I'll come back to some principles about practicing under the same kinds of situations that you're going to perform in. And column 4, just before we wrap up and have discussion, the ideal response. For each emotional trigger, have a pre-planned ideal response, including behavior. This pre-planning simplifies the process to move immediately into an ideal behavior. Rather than having to plan it at the time, you want to just do a simple step of moving into the behavior after you get ground center, not to think about it. Remember Yogi Berra. The repetition of these 4 steps will result in neural conditioning, rewiring the brain. It's a hard work miracle. After you do it enough times, you're pairing the usual emotional trigger with an ideal response, so ultimately what was usually triggering to create a state change will automatically result in the default mode of the ideal behavior, but you have to do it repetitively. It takes time. The neural conditioning chart brings conscious recognition of emotional triggers that otherwise instantaneously create a state change to an old state of mind with all of the familiar feelings and behavior beliefs. So in summary, column 1 and column 2, the emotional trigger and usual response, are simply to recognize more quickly an emotional trigger and the state change it immediately induces. Cueing your radar to recognize this as soon as possible means that you see the process of that state change instead of staying stuck in the content of that altered state and trying to change that. And again, like a time capsule, that content will never change. You can't think, reason, feel, figure, or therapize your way out of that state of mind. So rather than getting lost in the content of the state, which is so common, and to see it as the cause, instead address the process by getting grounded and centered, then move to a pre-planned ideal response for each particular emotional trigger. Remember, I mentioned in the beginning, if you want to change, address the system, the microsystem. As you do this repeatedly, you'll notice 2 things. The first is that as you repeat your mantra, the cue, the focus phrase, and physiology, like deep breathing, you'll notice that simply the cue alone will be sufficient, after you do it enough, to induce that deep, grounded, centered state where your performance is housed, the peak experience of deliberate practice. You won't have to do that focus phrase and physiology each time. This is the first phase of neural conditioning. You've rewired your brain to use an automatic cue to induce a state. So as you move through all 4 steps to ultimately engage in an ideal response, when you repeat this enough, it'll rewire your brain. Ultimately, the initial emotional trigger, as I mentioned, will be automatically coupled with a balanced state of mind and the ideal response. The trigger won't be triggering, but a cue for the ideal behavior, the default optimum behavior. So this is the hard work miracle. Your brain has rewired its operating system. And elite performers in business, sports, and the arts know and live the wisdom that the more enjoyable you make this whole experience, the better the performance will be. My favorite grandmother said it really simply, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So, in our next seminar, we're going to apply this to the neuroscience of peak performance and talk about confidence, mindfulness, deliberate practice, and unlearning. We're in discussion mode now. We have a much shorter period of time than I had hoped. If you'll manage the background noise, I'm interested in any thoughts or clarifications you have about anything we've talked about.
Dave, hi, it's Mike Ginevrino. How are you?
Hey, how are you? How's everything going?
Everything is okay. You know, I got here a little bit later. I was a little distracted.
Recording posted for tomorrow if you want to catch up.
I will. But what I, you know, what I was able to kind of gather leads me to either a question or an observation with this. You know, we're focused on stress and performance under stress. But, you know, I've been working with some people that actually has some ADD or things that resemble ADD. And, it, you know, just from listening to some of the techniques that you're talking about, I'm wondering if this is these techniques are, you know, not solely reserved to, you know, performance under stress, but just, you know, helping people with attention problems to kind of refocus, and it appears that there may be some cross benefit from the techniques that you're going to be covering here beyond stress that will kind of cross over to that attention deficit type of struggle that people have. I'm just curious what your thoughts are in that arena.
The short version is absolutely, and I will be giving some examples, and let's return to this, of working with professional coaches and other professionals who have attention challenges. And this is a very specific application. And when these principles are applied in specific ways to people with attention challenges, it's dynamite. It's exactly what they need, because their issue is having several minds, two brains, but needing one focus. And how you can systematically help them structure in their context that one focus, I think, yep, is going to be a real success strategy for them. And again, I'll mention a couple of case studies of my clients with, and just different ways of doing that. And I'll be interested to hear from you, Mike, about what, you know, what you find applicable for thinking about it in this way. But that's an excellent application, and thank you for mentioning.
Sure. Look forward to it.
Super. We're over a couple minutes, and I apologize for that. I'll usually be more persuasive, but I wanted to cover a couple of things with illustrations. Any other questions or comments right now?
Likewise. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. You go ahead.
It was a similar question to what was just asked. This is Lisa Lucero. Just for people that have issues with OCD, those types of things, is this, or even a post-traumatic stress situation? I know we are not therapists. However, if this interferes with their life and being able to move beyond, are these strategies useful or not? Or should we stay away from that?
I think it's, as you mentioned, I don't think there's a thin gray line between coaching and therapy or counseling or analysis. And as most of you know, I formerly, in my previous life, I was a psychoanalyst and a psychiatrist. But there's a big black line. So, first of all, you're only doing mentor coaching. Now, The way, and this is to everyone, the way you get to what we just talked about with someone who's thinking too much or who's marooned in their left brain, like OCD, they have a need, although applied in a different way, because their left brain can seize and hold hostage their right brain, so that they're in a negative thought loop and you know, kind of ruminating about something. In the same way that people who are emotional and get triggered emotionally, their right brain, to put it too simplistically, can seize and hold hostage their left brain. So the challenge in both instances is to get to a balanced experience, right and left brain. That's exactly what the column three is about getting grounded and centered so that someone can, in a balanced way, move to an ideal behavior. So you're coming at it from different directions. There are going to be different cues for column one, different kind of triggers for column one, or you may find for somebody who, is ruminating about something, they're stuck in column two, and they may not even be aware of what the trigger was, but this is still going to be applicable. So good question, and let's return to that. Let me get, before we go over too far, and we'll return to that, and thank you for asking. I appreciate your energy and input each of you. There was another comment or question at the same time, and I didn't hear.
Dr. Kruger, good evening. This is Lilita.
I will talk to you if you call me Dave.
Okay, Dave. This is Lilita.
Then, go ahead, now that we're clear.
I am interested in coaching executives, focusing on stress management. Would this be easily applicable to the office situation?
I think it is. Are you doing it individually or doing a training program, or what's the context?
Well, hopefully both.
Okay. Okay.
Depending
on
the need,
it
may be good.
The example I gave was an executive, and I think it's very applicable in a situation like that for optimum performance for someone in business as an executive. And I think there are ways to do this in a training program as well. We'll return to that. Because I think it's really important. But the answer is a resounding yes, and that's the way I developed it, working with pro athletes and coaches and executives. It's an actor. So instances where performance is exquisitely developed and a system is very necessary to do this. So we're going to elaborate on this next time. We still got three of these to go, so hang on. Thank you all for the responses you sent by email. Feel free to email me in response to that. If you didn't get an email from me, that means you registered late, and I'll forward this email that I sent earlier today on to you. Look forward to picking up with you right here next time. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye. Hey. Good night, all. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.